state of Minnesota, the Speaker of the House, and a Republican, mm-hmm. and you know, a guy, irascible guy with a great sense of humor, but he also never could probably accept the fact that the union was involved with any of the real meat of the what went on in the school district, and could not accept that the union was in it for anything other than just protecting its members.
Right.
And couldn't accept me as a leader having any other agenda other than just protectionism. It wasn't a part of his experience in business or in the legislature. It wasn't a part of who he was, and he just couldn't ever get his hands around it. So there again, they tried to make him superintendent, but the community had a fit, so he didn't get to be superintendent. He's, however, superintendent in a third ring suburb now.
Okay. So it seems like the community's always been backing your reforms. Not all the time, I imagine, but on a whole, you've had community support?
Well, that is an interesting question. Because you remember that part about the bushel basket and that a sin to pride is being a sin.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that we didn't do is spend nearly as much time either communicating what we were doing or gaining support in the community for what we were doing. So there never was as much knowledge of it as there should have been.
Hmm.
Partly it's because I've always thought it was an interesting tightrope we walk as union leaders in trying to communicate things. Because if you communicate only with your own members, then of course, as you know, we don't get the broad community, business, whatever support. Although I think the business community knew, the leadership in the city knew, the leadership in the legislature always knew.
Mm-hmm.
The legislature has always been disappointed that the AFT is not represented in this state anymore by, other than, you know, a few of us that are holding on in the locals after the merger. They always liked working with the AFT, always knew that we had a reform agenda. But if you talk about the parents and the community folks, we didn't do enough with the broad spectrum communication, partly because if you put things out in the press the way you sort of would like to put them out in the press, the teachers read the press and they believe that version,
right,
more than they believe what you've told them in a union meeting or what you've told them at a school site. And so they see their I don't know whether you'd say the better consumer of the public press than they are union press.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to believe the public press more. Well, if it was in the daily paper, it must be so. So my union colleagues, cohorts, would always say, you know, Louise, you can't talk about the number of teachers that the peer review system has wiped out. I said, yeah, but it sells well. They say, yeah, but you can't do that. Or, you know, the process being having teachers, you know, if they either can't or won't get significantly better, then they've got one foot on a banana peel and they're,
right,
you know, they're going to be out of here. They say, well, you can't do that. So for various reasons, we opted for sort of the leadership communication, which I became because I personally was interacting on boards and committees and task forces and everything with all the with community leaders
right.
and community politicians and or city politicians and state politicians. They all knew what our agenda was and knew that it was cutting edge and knew that it was reform. But when we communicated with members, we weren't always quite as vociferous. And then when we communicated with community, we didn't probably do enough of it at all.
Right. Just hoping for the trickle down.
Yeah. Which sometimes worked. Sometimes when, you know, you'd get in a community meeting and lately it's very difficult because all of a sudden now, almost overnight, we have consumer parents that want to know everything and think they know everything and want to have total choice of where their kid not only goes to school, but the teacher and the that they have, and they want to maintain these teachers and get rid of these teachers, and they don't want seniority involved, and there's, I mean, it's a huge deal now. So we started having meetings with the parent leadership groups in town and started rattling off all of this, you know, whole program. And they'd say, first of all, well, why didn't we know any of this?
Oh, now you tell us.
Mm-hmm.
This leads to something else, choice in charter schools.
Mm.
Charters came, what, in 91 to Minneapolis? Minnesota?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, they came here before they came anyplace else.
Yeah.
And they have also had a more devastating effect on this school district than anyplace else. Part of the reason that we are down to 33,000 kids now is because we've lost thousands of kids to charter schools. And we have also lost 3,000 kids to a settlement deal with the NAACP, because the NAACP had sued the state of Minnesota for lack of equity funding for urban education in the Minneapolis schools. And rather than have the legislature deal with it straight up with money, the State Department of Education mediated with the attorneys for the NAACP, and the result of that was that kids of primarily African American kids on the north side of Minneapolis would get free transportation to any suburb of their choice, and the suburb couldn't say, no, we don't have room. The suburb would have to take them. So that went on for 4 years. It was supposed to last for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
During that 4 years, we lost the 3,000 kids. Some came back, some stayed out there. So it worked for some, it didn't work for some.
Mm-hmm.
And then the State Department of Education thought it was such a good deal that they've continued it. So we continued to lose primarily African-American kids to the burbs. I'm going to digress just a moment here in that when you look at the city of Minneapolis and our twin city, St. Paul, they are very different. They're very different in ethnic makeup of families. They're very different in the leaders of the ethnic communities. They're very different in school district leadership and school district programs, and they're very different in unions, and you name it. It's like the Mississippi River divides this. It's just this huge chasm between these two cities that, you know, have grown up beside each other. And in this town, particularly the leaders of the community as of color have always blamed the schools, have always brought protests against the schools, have, you know, tirade against the schools and criticized the schools and basically totally blamed the schools for the lack of graduation rate and the lack of kids you know, doing well on tests and the lack of schools on the north side passing, making adequate yearly progress under NCLB, and having so many kids of color drop out. In that atmosphere, the charter schools, which in our town are almost totally single ethnic charter schools, have arisen for every single ethnic group. So we have now the most popular ones are Somali charter schools, Hmong charter schools, Native American charter schools, African American charter schools, and Hispanic charter schools. And they're very aggressive in their sales. I just heard this last week of a Somali family that moved into a home that was being sponsored by a church. They decided they wanted to help an immigrant family, and so this Somali family moved into a home that the church owns. And the father said that he gets calls every day almost from Somali charter schools saying, you ought to come with us. We'll provide door-to-door transportation. You ought to be, you know, in a charter school where the teachers can speak Somali. You ought to be, you don't want to be in the public schools. Public schools are dangerous. Your kids will have to walk, and all. And he said, and he says, I get tired of saying no, but he said, I just believe strongly in the public school system, so my kids are going to go to the public schools. But, and then they offer to pay me if I'll take my kids to the school. They'll turn around and spend the money that they would have had to have spent on picking my kids up. They'll pay me if I bring them. So he said, that's the kind of pressure that families are getting from charter schools, and they're, and so we're the entire decade of the 90s. The growth in the Minneapolis schools was all recent immigrants. Mm-hmm. We have one of the highest, second highest, I think, population of Somalis in the country. Same with Hmong.
Yeah.
We have the highest number of Tibetans outside of Tibet in the, I think, maybe the world or something like that. So we, you know, the churches here have a big role in bringing immigrants to the area. Part of my agenda always was that I thought I'd like the churches to play a little bit more role once they bring the families here than to help the families learn English and continue to help them know how to support their kids, to continue rather than just bring them here and then it's the school's responsibility. And I always thought, too, that, and I never got anywhere with telling the people in Congress about this one either, but or the whoever the Secretary of Education was at the time, that I always thought that INS, Immigration and Naturalization Service, also ought to play a role in not just helping the adults learn English and learn how to pass the test and be able to become a citizen, but in that same process, they also ought to help the kids learn English and to become citizens. And it would certainly, instead of just throwing all that on the schools and saying, here's, you know, it's they're all yours now. So, as I said, that went absolutely nowhere.
Of course. But do the charters have any accountability on them that's state-run, or is it?
Well, not enough.
Yeah.
There's some legislation in the legislature now. There's very strong charter lobby in this state. And there's some legislation to put a cap on the number now in the state. Oh, my goodness. That's it's going to be interesting whether it stays there or not.
Right.
And there is some They have to take some tests, but, you know, they don't have to take special ed kids.
Right.
If they do take special ed kids, it's our teachers that deliver the service. If we transport the kids to the charter schools, it costs us costs the school district $1,200 a year to transport a charter school kid to the charter school. It costs the school district like $350 to transport one of its own kids to its own schools. So, you know, it's one of those systems that isn't working for. I always worry that, you know, this great country is supposed to be the big melting pot, and I don't think melting is going on mm-hmm. in this town anymore. And I don't think melting is going on in the charter schools.
Okay.
So, but the big issue is, how do we know? Well, we don't know. So that's the other part, is the lack of accountability of what goes on and what's being taught and how the kids are doing. And as AFT research has shown, they don't do any better than the public schools do. But now they want to do it separately. And I just think that as a public education in this country was not supposed to be a separatist activity. So I think it's dangerous. One of our antidotes to that is that little legislation that I mentioned called self-governed schools. And that's why Randy Weingarten is starting the union schools in New York, and Philadelphia has the union's district-sponsored schools, and some of the activities of the schools that we can have control over so that we can try to attract some of those families back into the district. The district doesn't adjust very quickly to what the parents want. And for some reason or other, the district knows that, for instance, Montessori is very popular. We have several Montessori schools, and they're all popular. We know that some of the other programs are very popular, but they somehow don't replicate them, or they don't replicate them fast enough, or they don't respond to these consumer parents who want more Chinese immersion. We have a tiny little program in one school for Chinese immersion. Hmm. We ought to have. The district doesn't respond to, for instance, an all girls school or an all boys program, or, you know, some of the stuff that they really need to do more quickly. They can't turn. It's like the, you know, the Queen Mary. They can't turn on a dime.
Right.
But the.
Do you want to hold it there?
What time is it?
It's like 2:30.